Hi, I am Sarah Peterson.
And I'm Emily J. Smith.
And this is our new podcast called Clean Countertops.
Why is it called that, Sarah?
Thank you so much for asking. So we're calling the podcast Clean Countertops mostly because I have a newsletter called In Pursuit of Clean Countertops.
Fantastic newsletter.
Thank you so much. And I didn't think a lot about the name when I first started the newsletter, but now I think it really nicely encapsulates the capitalistic and gender-influenced search for self-optimization. And, you know, I began my career writing about motherhood, and there is this trope of the, like, perfectly immaculate countertop, the sun is shining down. So that's where that imagery came from.
It really captures something. It's very symbolic. I think
Thank
it's
you.
Perfect.
Thank you.
The symbolism of the ideal woman or something in modern times of the clean countertops. I will say up front that my countertops are not only never clean, I never even notice their state.
So this was the second reason we decided to name it Clean Countertops, because this push and pull between Emily and I's experience as women being women in the world is at once different and also the same.
Exactly. We are pulled towards the same idealism, but in very different ways. And it represents the vastness of ways this affects women, I think, because our experiences are so different, and yet we connect on this pursuit.
Yes. So you've really literally never thought about your countertops?
I mean, I do when I have like company or something. I've mostly lived alone, so I'm not performing ideal motherhood. Now that I am in a partnership, my partner is way more clean than I am, so I let him deal with that. I mean, sometimes I try and be like tidy and feel good, but it's not a normal thing.
I don't know. I feel like there is this class of people who can't see a cluttered countertop without feeling stress.
Yes. Yes. My sister.
Okay. Okay.
I am not that person.
Okay.
I can tune out my environment to a greatly disturbing degree, like to almost a sociopathic degree, Ben would say. Like he'll create like a whole new set of shelves and I won't notice them. I mean, it's really wild. So
it's also interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about it before and we'll probably talk about it again, but yeah. Okay, so that is our short story of why we called the podcast Clean Countertops. Emily, who are you?
My name's Emily J. Smith. I'm a writer and a tech professional. I'm the author of my debut novel, Nothing Serious, which came out earlier this year. And I write about tech, relationships, identity, and other things. And my newsletter, Unresolving, is on Substack.
That's great. I'll just tell people who I am.
Although they all know.
I write the newsletter In Pursuit of Clean Countertops. And I'm the author of Momfluenced, Inside the Maddening Picture-Perfect World of Mommy Influencers. And I have a novel coming out in 2027 called A Fascinating Woman.
It's amazing. Everyone pre-order. Oh, you can't pre-order it. Yeah,
no.
But get excited. Get excited.
Emily's one of the few people who's read it.
I saw it from the early stages. I'm obsessed.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into the microphone thing because I think this is interesting.
Okay. We spent about 45 minutes debugging this technical issue, which was essentially we couldn't hear each other because the microphone, if you tap it, like essentially if you touch the microphone, you mute yourself.
Yeah.
With no indication.
There's no button.
That you're muted whatsoever. My microphone didn't even come with instructions. Is it just because I'm born in the 80s that I expect like a packet of instructions to come with literally any piece of equipment?
Well, I think it says something about me that I didn't even look for instructions. So
it's like,
where's
the manual?
I don't know.
So we're like calling the technical support person. Can you hop on last minute? And he's like, you're muted. You're muted.
Oh, so that's the little behind the scenes podcasting moment.
There were other issues, but that one lasted the longest.
I think one thing that's interesting about how we're going to sort of interrogate ideals of womanhood is the fact that we sort of represent opposite sides of the woman spectrum, if you will. So I am married to a man. I have three kids.
You live in a gorgeous rural setting.
I really do. And we'll get into like how that narrative came about, because it is very much connected to the theme of the podcast. But Emily, why don't you describe your situation?
Yeah, I identify as kind of chronically single and childless. My novel, Nothing Serious, is largely about dating app culture and choosing not to have children as a woman of a certain age. And I come from a tech background. So I studied engineering. I went to business school, was very like high achieving in the male-dominated fields through my early 30s, and then like stumbled into writing in my 30s. So we come from a very different place.
Even I feel like I was the quintessential girl's girl in that, like, you know, my female friendships were everything from a very early age, whereas you only recently became a girl's girl.
I know. Like, in my mid to late 30s, I'm like obsessed with women, obviously, as all
as anyone should
are
be.
And should be. But yeah, through college, always hung out with guys. In my 20s, always hung out with guys. I mean, it was the nature of the space I was in, was that I was surrounded by guys, but it really like stunted me significantly in that I've told you this, Sarah. I mean, it's horrific and embarrassing, but it's like the only novel I read in college was Ayn Rand.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Wait, was it Atlas Shrugged or The Fountainhead? I can't remember.
I read both.
Oh,
I mean,
Jesus.
Yeah, I read both. But those were the only pieces of fiction that I read until I was about like 27. And then I just devoured all the things and just like listened to like male grunge rock up until I was 30. Like just missed out on like so many formative things.
Yeah.
But in the pursuit of being a certain type of good girl, like the guy's girl, you know?
Yep.
So anyway, we bring like a very different stance to this topic of, you said it so succinctly before, Sarah, exploring the
ideals of womanhood.
The ideals of womanhood, exactly.
So we thought a perfect way to sort of start this conversation would be to look at two archetypes that are, I mean, they're tired at this point, but I think they represent what seems like two opposite sides of the spectrum, when in fact, I think we're going to talk about how they're not.
They're not that far. Yeah.
So this is the girl boss versus trad wife, false binary that we're talking about. So do you want to start us off with girl bossery and sort of the history of the girl boss?
Yeah. I mean, I'm no history teacher, but we'll do a quick overview and we'll talk about like our relationship to the archetype and how it has shaped us.
Because I think it's fair to say that you sort of set out to be a girl boss and I sort of set out to be a trad wife.
Oh, I totally set out to be a girl boss. And yeah. And 100%. Yeah, absolutely. And then I do think that's what brings us together. So just also as background, like Sarah and I met in a writer conference, what, 9 years, eight?
I think eight or nine.
And just immediately read each other's essays. Yeah. And we're like, oh my God, we have so many similarities, despite the fact that like yours was about motherhood and mine was about, I have no idea.
It was about
something
a
about
guy.
Something about like a tech pro and my singleness.
Well, why don't you talk about how, like when you were growing up, I don't think we weren't using the term girl boss then, but what were you, you know, looking to become if not a girl boss?
We weren't using the term girl boss. So I wanted to become a man, essentially. A very successful, rich man. Like I grew up without money and I just wanted money in order to provide for my family, by which I mean my parents. My dream was to be an investment banker / some technical mogul or something. And anyway, so those were my childhood dreams. And I think the first insertion of the girl boss in, you know, now it's a dated, dead, goofy term, but in its, you know, heyday was, I guess, Lean In was when it really came in full force. Sheryl Sandberg's manifesto, if you will, which is now obviously very dated and was a plea for women to emulate men and just lean into the toxic male workplace.
Totally.
You know, and yep. I remember I had just graduated business school at the time, and the owner of the company I was working for said, "You have to read this book. You have to read this book."
Oh my God. It was a guy that recommended it.
Jesus Christ. Of course. And he thought he was really being helpful and coaching me.
And an ally.
I know. And I'm actually shocked that I had the wherewithal at the time to kind of laugh in my head at that. Obviously, not laugh at his face, but like kind of roll my eyes. And I actually didn't read it at the time because it came out in like 2013. So I guess I was 31. I was a few years out of business school. And I think at that point I was like a little eye roll at the lean in stuff. Not because I had fully identified I don't want to be a girl boss, but just because I felt like I was far enough in my career or something. I knew how to navigate it myself. Anyway, the point is, it wasn't as clear to me how toxic it was contemporaneously.
Yeah.
And then you get the huge wave of them in the aughts, like in the teens, I guess is what it's called. The aughts is, I guess, pre-2010.
Right.
Is that the right language?
Okay, whatever. But yeah, like all the little, like, I think Away Suitcase had a thing.
Oh, Away, Gloss,
Sophia.
Sophia, the nasty gal, whatever. She, I think, was like the rise and death of the girl boss in some ways because I remember watching that show. There was actually like a whole scripted show about Nasty Girl and just, or gal, what was it called?
I think it was gal.
Okay, yeah. And I think I was very judgy, like, you know, whatever, this was over 10 years ago. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, this is so mean. I remember thinking like...
like, did you know even then that like this girl boss feminism was bullshit?
Yeah, I think for me, I was like, you're not a guy enough. Inherent in girl bossism is this patriarchal hierarchy, capitalist competitiveness. And so when you're plugged into that system, you're competitive and bitchy. And I think that's how I was when I was viewing other women. I mean, girl boss is not equivalent, obviously, with female ambition. And I think that's what we're teasing out now. But at the time, that's how it felt.
It did. And it was like this noble thing. Like people were claiming it proudly.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I think because I was a little older than... I mean, only a few years older than Nasty Gal Woman, but was so rooted in masculine culture since like day one of college.
Yeah.
Even the term girl boss gave me the chills because I didn't like associating with anything feminine.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I want to be a boss leading like a male company.
So interesting. Because like there's such self-loathing embedded in there.
Oh my God, so much self-loathing, like denying my entire femininity.
Right.
So talk to me about the time frame of the trad wife entering culture. And was it the exact overlapping time period or how did that?
No, it was later.
Later.
Yeah. But what I think is interesting is that obviously a huge part of what I write about is like critiques of performances of traditional femininity.
Yeah.
But if I break down my ambitions post-college, post my little stint as a actor who didn't act.
Yes. Were you in anything? Can we find clips anywhere?
I mean, yeah. I don't know. Probably. Okay. I don't know. But we've talked about how I like pursued motherhood like blindly just as a way out of my like career. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I think because I was relying on motherhood to fulfill, you know, all of my ambitions, all of my fulfillment, it was necessary to view it as like a trad wife thing, even though the term didn't exist. But like, I fucking did my little homemade granola bars. I, you know, felt stupidly guilty about screen time.
Mm-hmm. Give us a date. When was your first child born?
2012.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, well before any of this happened. Like, Instagram was barely a thing. But yeah, like I wanted motherhood and like keeping a home to be a full-time endeavor that satisfied me in all ways.
Yes. And you got that from your mother, you think, or culture? Or...
Yeah. I mean, and again, she was like a feminism without talking about being a feminist, I would say. And she wasn't at all submissive to my dad, like at all. It was, if anything, the opposite. But she was a stay-at-home mother, and she did really enjoy certain aspects of domesticity. So, like, I could see that there was real joy and creative interest to be had in the home. But, yeah, I mean, it's just funny to think about how, while I didn't want to be a submissive wife, of course, I did want to do almost everything else that Trad Wives Online are doing.
Right.
And I think now there's this conversation about, like, Trad Wives are a reaction to girl boss feminism and, like, hustle culture. But I want to tease that out. Yeah.
Because it's like girl boss in the container of the home, kind of. Like, it is this, like, aggressive... Yeah, hyper-achieving.
Really ideological.
Ideological, yeah, exactly. Performing a certain archetype that is actually in the patriarchal mold.
Yep.
In the false vein of women's empowerment. Like, it's so a different shade of the same thing.
And I also think, you know, you were talking about how, like, the girl boss was not man enough for you, essentially. Because, like, intrinsic to her lure was, you know, I'm in the corporate boardroom and I wear suits, but I can fuck and I'm hot.
Exactly. The hot is key.
Key.
Because it really hit its stride. It's almost like Sheryl Sandberg wasn't hot enough or something. Like, she
I almost spit out my water.
And it's like Audrey Gelman of The Wing.
Mm-hmm. She was...
super
right hot.
She's almost like veering, she's almost spanning our worlds right now.
I know,
because she's creating this like kitschy, domestic haven of a brand or something right now.
And what's her face from Outdoor Voices?
Yes, I'm very forgetting her name.
Like, girl who eats pizza and drinks with the boys hot.
yeah but they're all, I'm not picturing the Outdoor Voices one, but I'm thinking of Emily, whatever her name is, who started Glossier.
Vice, or I don't know. Is it Vice? Vice?
Yeah. Vice.
They all appeal to the male gaze.
White women.
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember when I founded my own company.
Oh, yeah. Talk about what the company was.
Okay. It was a dating app. I founded it in 2019 after being on the apps
for a
decade.
Perfect timing.
Yeah,
perfect.
Great timing. December 2019 for a dating app. After being on the apps for a decade and being miserable on them, I write a lot about how my dating life spanned pre-apps and post-apps and wanting to bring back the community and the socializing of pre-app dating by, like, involving your friends in the experience. So on Chorus, which was the name of the company, your friends swiped for you. Which a few apps were doing, but the way this was unique is it targeted 30-plus daters, so people over 30. And for the matchmakers, the people who did the swiping, we actually targeted people in couples who were kind of intrigued by this dating app because it had taken over culture.
Yeah.
But wouldn't, like, download Tinder to swipe for their friends. I mean, they just wanted something safe and, like, community-oriented to help their friends out.
Yeah.
Because it was pervasive in the culture, but it was also widely known that dating apps suck so badly.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did raise venture funding for that. And through that venture funding process, I remember, like, making sure, like, the front of my hair was straightened and then pulling it back or, like, looking a certain way, which is not new. And especially, I mean, I have curly hair, but, like, Black women or women of different ethnicities with, like, more texturized hair than mine, like, have been dealing with this for so long. But it's, like, yeah, certainly not a coincidence that all these girl bosses are branded and presented a certain way. And I remember I would be in founder spaces a lot and, you know, guy founders dress the way I'm dressed right now.
Totally. Like,
this is a uniform.
Yeah, black
sweatshirt. A uniform I love and adopt and will probably wear every episode. But then I would go to some female founder events and it would be so glitzy and so made up and like everyone to the nines. And I'm just like, why are we doing this? Why do we feel we have to look so perfect?
But I mean, like, we it's do. Not like you no, genuinely totally. Were like, gosh, why is this happening?
No, I wasn't genuinely, but I did try and push back. And I'm sure no one there wanted to. I'm not blaming the women in the room. It's just like, why does culture expect the girl boss? And, you know, the answer is clear. It's not a mystery. It's like the expectations on women are in every part of life. Parenting, huge, like so much fiercer than on men. But it's just so blatant when you see it in these forms. Like, you can't even say male founder dinner because any founder dinner is like mostly male.
Yeah, totally.
But to then going to like an all-female drinks
like
founder
a female
thing.
Empowerment. Yeah.
And it's just like all pink and gold and like, God. It's just so funny. It's a bit sad that, you know, women have to waste so much energy on their looks always, even now.
Well, which brings us to another thing that connects the girl boss to the trad wife is like, obviously, appearance is everything.
It's everything.
And when I define trad wife, I'm not talking about like a woman without social media who's living a traditional life.
Of course. Yes. Good differentiation.
Yeah. Yes. Like I'm talking about someone who is performing that traditional life online for an audience.
I just want to say that also applies to the girl boss because I've worked professionally with amazing women leaders.
Yep.
They are fucking brilliant and they get shit done.
Yep.
And they're not branding themselves as girl boss. They would probably like roll their eyes out of the skull to hear that term. So yeah, it's similar.
And yeah, when I just keep thinking about all these like famous white women who started these companies, it's like their personas were so integral to the company's success and like allure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
the two were really inextricably linked in a way that is super similar to the most famous trad wives of our era.
Yeah, exactly. With the girl boss, you have the male corollary where I'm like, okay, you can clearly see male founders, male CEOs aren't the brand of the company nearly as much as when there's a female at the helm.
Yep.
Steve Jobs is like one of the examples.
Right.
He's an anomaly compared to most female CEOs are a brand.
Yeah.
With trad wives, there isn't that male comparison as
No. Yeah. It isn't, which is, I guess, like one of the actual differences. It is like implicitly a female-dominated industry. But like, imagine Ballerina Farm. If Hannah Nealeman was 48 with the same amount of kids and was not connected to massive generational wealth and lived in a normal-ass suburban house that wasn't stripped down to resemble something from like the Great Depression, the messaging would not hit. Like, it would not feel romantic. It would not feel aspirational.
And the visual package of the influencer, of the trad wife, it's like inherently something we place on women. Like, there are men, like you said, who are like living a traditional life, but not packaged as an influencer doing it.
Right.
There are men running companies. They're not packaging themselves. I guess like slightly more today because
because everybody.
But proportionally compared to women in that position. And so then is it just the age old like placing the visual emphasis on women far more than men or like consuming women's identities as a commodity, you know, more than men needing to digest their selfhood in a way that's like palatable for them. I don't know. There's like so much there that isn't put on men.
Right.
That causes this.
Because like, okay, so like one of the tenets of the trad wife is she is submissive. I mean, I'm not saying all women who, you know, seem like trad wives online would describe themselves as submissive. I'm saying like if we're talking the archetype.
Yes. Yes.
And I feel like the girl boss is also submissive to a way of life, and she is submitting herself to essentially a system that will maybe, you know, rise her up and give her like power and wealth, but in doing so must continue to exploit other women and various other marginalized people.
Yeah, exactly. Where you went with the submissive, in my head, I was like, okay, the girl boss is fiercely aggressive.
Big air quotes.
Big air quotes.
Yeah.
Because it's a brand. It's still a trap. You know, it's still this package of self. And it is an indentation to the bigger, like, patriarchal form of corporate progression or whatever that inherently undermines and exploits people with less power. So it is submitting to that system, exactly like you said.
And isn't her quote-unquote aggression that also, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong because you know more about this. Like, I would almost assume that, like, behind the scenes, when they're not focusing on branding, they probably do pull some pretty, like, intense punches, like, as founders and leaders. But when it comes to, like, you know, getting money from people, I just imagine, so, you know, like, fucking superhero movies where, like, the hot girl badass will come in and, like, really do nothing narratively important except, like, I don't know, she'll give a kick and be like, yeah, showed him. And we're supposed to be like,
totally. And she's wearing, like, a skin tight suit and has, like, a perfect quote unquote again body, whatever.
Yeah. And, like, doesn't do anything to lead the plot forward, but, like, gives a hot little kick.
Yeah.
And it's like, totally. Yeah, fuck you. But I feel like the girl boss also has to perform this, like, badass drag. Like, she can't walk in and, you know, have no smiles and just dress like a male founder. She has to, like, put on this little shtick of, like, badass woman.
Yeah, it's such a thin tightrope to walk of you have to be a badass woman, but not too badass, because a lot of women, and it is, it's being a CEO is a hard role, and most CEOs make mistakes and are aggressive because they're making a lot of hard decisions and are under the thumb of capitalism, which is inherently aggressive and exploitive. And so they have to be that aggressive and exploitive to run a for-profit company.
Right.
And also do it with a smile and a perfectly made-up face and all this other stuff. And so you're constantly, like, wearing these two sides and trying to make them meld together. And it's like, feminism and capitalism are inherently contradictory.
Right.
And so, not that femininity and feminism are the same. They're not.
Right.
At all. But yeah, it's just such a hard tightrope to walk. And sometimes, like, I was thinking earlier today, just to bring up Elizabeth Holmes, who is, like, an interesting case. Is she a girl boss? She doesn't meet the pretty, like, hyper bubbly pink.
Right. And she, like, did the whole lowering her voice, going to your, like, trying to be a man.
She did Steve Jobs drag. Like, she dressed, like, in her black turtleneck, which I respected.
Wait. Clarify what you respected so people don't get the wrong idea.
Just the black turtleneck.
Like,
and
the
that
uniform.
Was her uniform.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't respect the fact that she was mimicking Steve Jobs per
se. Oh, God. No. Totally. Just, like, didn't doll up.
Well, she had her red lipstick.
I love, like, one single statement choice. Anyway, I'm not going to pick apart Elizabeth Holmes. I love that she didn't really know what to do with her hair.
We didn't even get it. Yeah, I was just going to say the hair.
She raised.
I know.
Anyway, she's proven to be such a sociopath. But, like, it was interesting. There were certain parts where I'm like, how many tech bro Silicon Valley founders are also sociopaths, like many, actually.
Oh, totally.
The WeWork guy, like, there's so much. I mean, I could go on and on, but yeah, she was really not considered a girl boss, I think, but she made so much money. But even before the scandal, I feel like, I don't know. She's just a very interesting case to me.
The more we talk about this, the more I think it's like about erotics.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
In both cases. I mean, the trad wife one is just fucking obvious. Hot little apron, yeah, whatever.
But it's like men are not consuming trad wife content, or are they? I'm very ignorant on all this.
Yeah, no. I would say the main way it's interacting with like masculinity is in the manosphere.
Yeah.
With, you know, incels talking about finding their perfect trad wives.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do think it is like, I don't know, a pretty generic male fantasy to just have like a little housewife serving you.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But when it comes to the girl boss, it's like some part of men, I'm really going off the deep end here, but like they want to fuck themselves.
Oh, yes. Totally.
Right?
Oh my God. Yeah. So you're saying by wanting the girl boss, they're like wanting the female.
Right. Like a fuckable version
of
the things that they like about themselves or
something. Right. The masculine leader or something, but like wrapped in a female form.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my whole dating hypothesis for a long time. If I could just be like, guys, if I could just emulate the guys I'm obsessed with perfectly, then they'll love me. But then most men actually hate themselves when it comes down to it. Like they like it until you really perfect it. And then, I mean, there's also something inherent about just like it allowed me to escape building an identity of my own for so long.
For sure. Like, who among us?
Yeah, who amongst us has not? There's a lot of brainstorming to do about future episodes. We're going to do one on menopause.
Which also has to be fuckable now.
Which also has to be. I mean, there's so much to say on that. I can't even imagine. Can we just age in peace? I just want to age in peace. I've earned it.
I know.
But literally every 4 minutes, I'm like, what was I going to say? My brain just feels like fog, and I do think that's menopause related.
Oh, totally. 100%.
I'm like memento writing all my thoughts, like on my arm. I'm just like, what if each sentence needs to be written out as I'm uttering?
Wait. Back to, I mean, this is, I think, fairly obvious at this point, but like the most successful trad wives are girl bosses in that they're making money from the performance and the commodification of a lifestyle.
Yeah. Of traditional womanhood.
Yes.
Okay, here's a question. Do you think women's desire to be this perfect mother, homemaker figure, how, if at all, related is it to what we were just talking about, where that's like secretly or not so secretly men's ideal woman?
I don't know if people are explicitly or consciously thinking about that, but like, yeah, like if I think about my own motivations for being a quote unquote perfect mom, hotness is so wrapped up in it.
Right. Hotness.
Because like there's something about, I'm saying this as if it's like a fucking original point, but like maintaining one's value for the male gaze feels intrinsic to maintaining one's personhood, which is super chill and healthy.
No, but for real, that's what I was just going to say, even as I asked that question. Maybe it's not directly wanting a guy's attention, but it's like inherent to valuing the self is the overlord of male approval on some level until you free yourself, which can take a while. And are you ever really free in this society? I don't know.
I mean, well, if you think about like the perfect mom, you're thinking about like one of the key attributes of the quote unquote perfect mom, I think, is that it all is easy.
Oh, yeah.
And her hotness has to be easy too.
Natural.
Yes.
Supernatural.
Yes. Like,
yeah.
You don't think of like a generic mid 40s mom with a normal ass face and body. Like, you don't, when you think perfect mom, you think hot.
Totally. Totally.
Which makes zero sense when you think about like what mothering actually is.
Because we don't want to give the credit to women, or we don't want to like acknowledge the burden.
Right.
And so we need to be presented with the ease. Like that has to be like, yeah. Otherwise, we have to give them something and we don't want to give them something.
No. And back to the similarities, it's like the perfect mom is more important as a symbol yeah, than taking any look whatsoever at like what motherhood entails.
The mothering.
Yes. Or the mother.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
And that's the same for the fucking girl boss. Like,
totally.
It was like what they were able to visually communicate by their branded selves was more important than, I don't know, any of their companies. Like,
how they're running the company. When the company started to fail, they failed. But it was like the branding was really at the forefront. And actually, the success of the company depended on the branding.
Yes.
Which is very unique to the female founder. So are people getting sick of the trad wife?
Like, oh my
they've
God,
certainly
yes.
tired off girl boss. What is the current?
I know. Like, what? I know. Because, like, yeah, I think the trad wife is like, everybody's fucking sick of it. Talking about it. Like, we've just said, I don't know. I mean, I'm still talking about it, obviously, but like, it does feel like major trad wife fatigue in a similar way to the girl boss.
To the
fatigue.
Girl boss. So I was thinking about like when, you know, because during the teens, super big girl boss boom. And then we had Me Too, which was 17, 18.
18.
Yep. Okay. And then it came crumbling.
Right. It was like almost backlash to
the Me Too.
Yep.
And then I think pandemic cinched it.
Yeah.
Because then
that sourdough.
It was a sourdough. Maybe trad wife life really took off. We passed the baton. But it was also this notion, and maybe this actually is also related to trad wife stuff, where women were forced to pause. Like, we stepped back from corporate life as a culture because we were staying home and we were, like, confronted with a mass, you know, crisis. And there were so many crucial and, like, major race conversations happening in 2020. Like, there was so much going on in 2020. Yep. And I think that was, like, a real hard stop to something that was already kind of declining. And women were starting to be like, I'm not getting enough. Like, I'm pushing so hard.
Yep.
And what am I even getting? And there was kind of a similar thought around motherhood.
Like, oh, yeah.
Because there was, people were stuck with their kids and there was so much conversation at that time around mothering.
I think your point about like people taking a pause is so smart because it's like, there was so much grappling with what is a mother? How is a woman fulfilled in life? And I do think that really led to the crystallization of this hyper-gendered feminine ideal that is the trad wife. This, like, return to gender essentialists. Like, this is just what makes women happy. And we've been miserable because we've been in denial about it.
This is what capitalism does. It swings us to the pendulums. And it's like, can we just step back from the hyper-corporate race and fucking make our sourdough but not be a full-on marketable trad wife? Like, can we slow down without commodifying the slow-downedness?
Right.
I think the answer is no.
Well, I know.
I mean, we can.
Individually, I guess-ish.
We can individually, but we will not be rewarded by society for it. And so then it becomes a whole individual dilemma where it's like, how much are you chasing the rewards of society?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like we're in our mid-40s now, so I'm not chasing that shit as much. But it's really, it's hard when young people are ambitious. I mean, we're still ambitious. I'm not saying ambition.
Yeah.
But it's like blind ambition. You go for the things that are rewarded. And the packaging of things just is, shifting from one to the next. But like, so where are we now?
I mean, pronatalism is still going strong.
Oh my God, pronatalism. It's like my least favorite thing. I almost can't engage with that at all because
That's for the best, probably.
Yeah. I didn't say this in my intro, but like I have a step-ish son. I call him my step-ish son because me and my partner are not married. And so his mother doesn't let him call me step-mom.
I'm just shaking my head.
But I consider him my stepson. 100%. I've been with my partner for 5 years. And yep. I love him very much. So I have a role as a mother, but I don't consider myself as a woman who chose to have kids. I very intentionally right. chose not to have kids. And so I feel very strongly about the pronatalist conversation that's yeah. being had right now, which we'll certainly talk about on another episode.
For sure.
We probably should wrap up
yeah.
at some point.
Well, we did solve all the problems.
Of course. Always. So we explained the entire history of yes. tribes, wives, and girl boss.
We didn't forget anything either.
Yeah. Covered it all in a tight 40 minutes. Super seamless and scripted.
Should we talk okay. about like the future of the pod and what we hope to do with it briefly? And then
I do, but I really wanted to answer this question oh. of like, is there a current for like what we should get a Gen Z person on? And
oh, ask yes. them, what is the current aspirational
what's
ideal?
What's the aspiration? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've been reading things like, oh, it's the age of the influencer is over, but the micro influencer is where it's at, which is like
but
tomatoes, tomatoes.
Yes, exactly. exactly. And what? It's not like they haven't been around. Like micro influencers.
Totally. Like, oh, okay, so you're going to care about your photos, but not that much.
Right.
like what? I don't know.
I know. Like, I don't fucking know, but I vaguely sense that like, it's cool to not care about aesthetics, which is obviously an aesthetic in
which
and of
an
itself.
Aesthetic. We've it's been like... here. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. I guess, okay, continued conversation.
We're too old to know, yeah. frankly. It's none yeah. of our business.
It's none of our business. Okay, let's talk about the future of the pod.
So we will continue to have conversations between Emily and I where we talk about the hot takes of the day and the headlines.
Yes, as it relates to the good girl archetype.
Yes.
In many different forms.
Yes. And occasionally we'll bring on a guest. We have a few that we've already talked to that we're super excited about.
Very excited.
But yeah, we will just continue to very neatly and concisely solve all the problems of feminism today on every
always.
Episode.
Yeah. It's meant to be fun. Always open to guest ideas or topic ideas.
I think you meant listener ideas.
No, or, I actually meant guest
oh,
ideas from okay. listeners.
Like I we thought should this have was a newbie on. Podcast thing where you were like forgetting to call listeners listeners.
You're like, Emily, let's call them listeners.
No, for sure. Yes, yeah. agreed. On both listener and guest suggestions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm excited. This will be yes. fun. We have so much to talk about. Sarah and I are texting nonstop throughout the day. So it's a real thrill. Let's say one last thing, which is we have been dreaming about starting a podcast for years. Like I think pre-pandemic.
Yes, we bought microphones that we never used.
We bought like little microphones yep. off Amazon and I bought a domain name.
Oh my God, that's right. Wait, yes. wait, wait. Wasn't it the thing about the generation?
Existential Xennial. Yes. Which I think was brilliant, but I love you. This was
I love
so
you.
Fun. All right. Till next time.
Bye.
Bye.